This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim. We're turning our attention over to Singapore because I guess the question that they're facing there is, what if COVID-19 can't be eliminated even with the majority of the population vaccinated? This is the reality that Singapore is preparing for as it draws up a blueprint for living with COVID-19 in the community. In an op-ed for The Straits Times last week, the co-chairs of the government coronavirus task force said that they're making plans to treat COVID-19 as endemic, which will require a shift in the way that testing and quarantine is carried out.
And of course, this could also require booster shots for vaccination in the future. So with that in mind, how different would our lives be, for context, if COVID-19 is seen as endemic? And would this strategy be more bearable for the long term?
Joining us to discuss this is Dr. Paul Thambia, President of the Asia-Pacific Society of Clinical Microbiology and Infection. Good morning, Dr. Thambia. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. So what is the rationale for treating COVID-19 as endemic versus a pandemic? And does this mean that the concept of herd immunity no longer applies?
Well, the reality is that every pandemic has become endemic. It's just a matter of time. You know, for example, the H1N1 2009 influenza A pandemic, within a year and a half, the WHO declared that it was endemic. And, you know, if you got your flu jab last year, you would have got a jab for the H1N1 pandemic influenza. Even the deadly Spanish flu of 1918 to 1919, which killed 1 in 30 people worldwide, eventually became the dominant strain of influenza that was endemic from 1919 to 1957. So basically, you know, herd immunity can only be achieved for endemic diseases. What that means is that, I'll give you an example, like polio. If you talk to your grandparents, they'll tell you about the polio epidemics that we had in Singapore and Malaysia in the 1950s and 60s. And then what happened, we got a really good vaccine. And with the vaccination, we achieved herd immunity. So epidemics in the 1950s and 60s, endemic all the way through. And now we have herd immunity, and we're actually moving close to elimination of polio. So it takes a long time.
So Singapore is talking about treating it as an endemic. But in general, how would policy responses change if elimination is not the outcome?
Well, you know, basically, there's only, I think, two countries which are really looking at elimination, and that's Australia and New Zealand, because they are so far away from everyone else, and they can afford to stay isolated. The rest of the world is de facto recognizing, I think, that, you know, it's going to be really, really hard to eliminate this virus. And I think it's a matter of time before WHO realizes that's possible. You know, even the original SARS in 2003, it did reappear in 2004 when there was spillover. But once it goes beyond five or six countries, trying to eliminate a virus is going to take a really long time. So I think the focus then becomes protecting those who are vulnerable, protecting the healthcare system, and not trying to nail down every single case. Like I said, only Australia and New Zealand seem to be able to do that.
So with that in mind, Doctor, what needs to be in place in order for this strategy to be effective then? What needs to, what do we need to put in place?
Well, I think we don't really need to do anything because the virus will essentially do what it wants. What is important is to recognize the facts on the ground and concentrate on looking after people, protecting those that are vulnerable, the elderly, those with other medical conditions who are more likely to get complications of the disease. You know, we recognize that unless you're going to completely shut the borders, there's just no way you can do it because it's going to be, if it's circulating anywhere in the world, there's always a risk. And again, going back to the example of polio, a couple of years ago, there were cases of polio in Sabah that were brought in from a neighboring country. So the key is still to protect the vulnerable and the healthcare system.
So when Singapore eventually comes out with its roadmap in order to address this as an endemic, what do you hope to see in that roadmap?
Well, you know, yesterday I took my mom out to lunch for her birthday, but I had to leave my wife behind, as we're still only allowed to have two people dining in a cafe at one time. So I hope we move closer to normality. I mean, the poor people who are running the cafe, they really felt the pain of a lot of these restrictions. And I think we are on track for that because the vaccination rates in Singapore are shooting up. We vaccinated large numbers of people. And once you vaccinate large numbers of people, the numbers will go down. We have no choice. We're still open. We're still getting imported cases. But once the numbers go down, then I think, you know, we can gradually begin to open up. And that's what I'm looking forward for.
Well, Malaysia still has more than 5,000 cases a day, which, you know, in my mind seems very high still. When can a country acknowledge this as an endemic? I mean, like a country in Malaysia, can we still call it an endemic? I mean, are we ready to call it an endemic yet, or should we treat it like a pandemic?
Yeah, you know, like I said, every pandemic becomes endemic. So it's just a matter of time. And the reality is it'll probably be WHO which declares that the pandemic, you know, that it's transitioned to an endemic state. Small countries like Singapore and Malaysia can't do that. So what we have to do is we still have to concentrate on the job of a doctor or healthcare system is to protect patients, to look after them, to treat those who are sick, and to prevent those who are vulnerable from getting complications. So I think that's what we have to focus on doing. And we have to weigh up the risk versus benefit. You know, any kind of medical intervention, I talk to some of my patients and they say, you know, if the drug has no side effects, it's probably got no effect, which, you know, is the way a lot of old people in the regions think about drugs. So it's the same thing. See, we have to balance the medication, which in this case is restrictions and lockdowns, versus the benefits, which is protecting the individuals, preventing people from getting into ICU and getting infected and actually dying.
In your best estimation, what markers should we look out for in acknowledging this as it's time to say, call it a pandemic?
Yeah, so I think the key is looking at the impact on the healthcare system. See, what we have done in Singapore is we have delayed elective surgeries. And, you know, that after a while, people who are waiting for their knee replacements find it harder and harder. You know, people will fall, they'll get complications like that. So we don't want to be in a situation where the risk of the restrictions is greater than the benefit. So careful monitoring. And I think probably the most useful one is the impact on the healthcare system.
The op-ed by the Singapore Task Force said that testing would be used differently in an endemic. Could you elaborate on this? How should testing be used if not to contact, trace and isolate then?
Yeah, you know, right now what we're doing is, like, for example, if we find the virus in the wastewater connected with one housing block, they do a mass testing exercise of everybody. If we recognize that the disease is endemic and you may get one or two cases here and there, but you want to protect those who are vulnerable, we won't have to do that. And what we will do is we will test people who are going to be in at-risk situations, or we'll test people who have minor symptoms. And we've already made the home test kits available. You can walk down to a Guardian or Unity Pharmacy and you can just buy a test kit yourself. And I think that's the future. You know, it's like you can walk down to a 7-Eleven, get a pregnancy test. So the widespread availability of testing with the goal of identifying those who are at risk rather than, you know, just trying to completely wipe out the virus.
So, Dr. Nobel, on that note, let's just follow that up. So part of what life could look forward if when this becomes an endemic is getting our own test kits, doing and testing ourselves. What else could life look like with COVID-19 as an endemic? Is there any context you can provide here for us?
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've got plenty of precedents. You know, measles appeared on the scene a few hundred years ago. It's still up to about 5 years ago, it's killing, you know, 500,000 children every year. But thanks to a widespread vaccination campaign, in fact, measles vaccination is compulsory in Singapore. You can't go to primary one without measles vaccination. So I think that's what we're going to be looking for. You know, a situation like measles where we still get occasional cases. We get cases from travelers who are brought in, or we get cases from unvaccinated individuals. But it's kind of disappeared. You know, the junior doctors in Singapore have almost never seen a case of measles. When we have a case of measles, everyone gets very excited. They go and start looking at the patient, look at the rash. So, you know, that's what I think we will be looking for in the next maybe 4 to 5 years when we have widespread vaccination against COVID, that COVID-19 will become an unusual disease. But like I said, if we accept that it's going to become endemic, we're not going to wipe it out, and we're not going to shut down the city just because we get 2 or 3 cases.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Dr. Tambia. That was Dr. Paul Tambia, President of the Asia Pacific Society of Clinical Microbiology and Infection, giving us a bit of context into what life could look like with COVID-19 endemic to society rather than a pandemic that everyone is striving to suppress. And I think the example of measles and the fact that everyone gets vaccinated even here with the MMR vaccine, right? So measles, mumps and rubella. And you have to do that in order to in order for children to be allowed to go to school. So is that what lies ahead for COVID-19 in the future?
Yes, I guess so. Learning to live with it. So practicing good hygiene, we'll have to continue mask up in crowded areas and get an annual vaccination. Not just children, I think adults will have to do that too.
Yeah, I guess the key is going to be timeline, right? Because he alluded to something like 4 to 5 years. So realistically, that's something we have to think about and prepare for as well, dealing with this for the next few years, not just what next 1-2 years. But also to a point where I look forward to the day where COVID-19 is regarded like measles and doctors are like, oh, cool, can we study this as well? I'm looking forward to that day where it's just like one case in like 1 month or something like that.
So the Evening Edition also explored the issue of living with COVID-19 for the long term. On the 17th of June, they spoke to Professor Dr. Sanjay Rampal, who's an epidemiologist at University of Malaya. You can find out more about that if you look up the podcast, Is the Herd Immunity Goal Hopeless? On the BFM app and on the website, bfm.my. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.